You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Celerud eyed her inquisitively, then said,
"You like Shulatam, not eat animal."
The wrinkled one glanced at Brahms, and they engaged in a lively conversation, Boros and the others joining in until Celerud looked back at Deliani.
"But you different from Shulatam. Smell same but talk different. Wear different clothes. What eat?"
"Almost anything from the forest," said the Kirin. "Honey, berries, seeds, mushrooms, clover, nuts, almost anything but meat." Glancing at the others, Celerud said a few words in their harsh tongue. Though not finished with their meal, all but the wrinkled one rose and filed out of the room without a word, each taking whatever morsels were left in front of them. Alone with the tribe's obvious leader, Deliani didn't know what to expect.
"Come house, mine," said Celerud, rising and moving around the circular table to the Kirin.
The old one helped her to her feet, and on the way out handed her the torch. They moved down a hallway until Celerud motioned her to enter another room. It was larger than the last, and a collection of bones was tossed in a corner. A few low stones were positioned on the floor. "For sitting," thought Deliani. Spread on the floor on one side of the room was an animal pelt. "For sleeping," she thought. The wrinkled one took the dwindling flame from the Kirin's hand, placing it on the floor against a wall, then gestured toward a stone.
"Sit."
The Kirin did, the old one sitting down opposite her.
"Know your food, Griglacave," said Celerud.
"How long has it been since I lost my way?" wondered Deliani. "Part of a day? Several days?" It wasn't important, because the Grigla's next statement gave the Kirin more reason for hope than anything since her ordeal began.
"Take you, Shulatam Cave."
Deliani could hardly believe her ears, yet reveled in what she heard. "Is it true? I must believe it, or at least act like I do. Thank you. That's exactly what I want. But I must take the raven with me. Where is she?"
"Safe. Not come this cave. Not bird or animal, unless dead, then food."
Though heartened, Deliani had a gnawing suspicion these meat-eaters might find Manet too tempting to resist. "When may I see her?"
"No see. Bird safe. Not come here."
"May I visit her? She's my close companion, a friend. She might be doing badly without me."
"Far, not need go."
Not wanting to irritate the old Grigla, and hoping it would remain cooperative, Deliani stopped asking about Manet. "Where does your food come from?"
"Go outside night. See good. Find. Kill. Good hunter."
Then the wrinkled one revealed something surprising.
"You woman kinnin. Brahms, Boros, smell, find out. I woman too. Woman leader of Grigla."
She gave forth a series of deep, undulating sounds that echoed through the grotto.
"Not young woman like you. I old, used woman leader of Grigla."
Kinnin, thought Deliani. She can't pronounce the word Kirin. Deliani hadn't thought of these creatures as having gender, female or male. They were simply mysterious, astounding, frightening things. Able to see in the dark, they rescued her from the water and the blackness of her imprisonment when she had almost given up hope. Unless she survived the waterfall, a nearly suicidal gamble, without their help, she would still be lost. Or did they rescue her? She presumed so, but now asked.
"Brahms," said Celerud, "pull you out."
"I'm grateful indeed for what Brahms did." Celerud's voice was similar to the others, including Brahms and Boros.
Except for her aged skin and longer tusks, the wrinkled one looked like, sounded like, and was dressed like all the rest. What were Brahms and Boros, wondered Deliani, male or female? Again, she asked.
Brahms man Grigla, Boros man Grigla, said Silarud,
and pouring forth from her came the same reverberating sound as before. The expression on her face didn't change, except for the mouth becoming slightly wider, but Deliani suspected this was Grigla laughter. She wondered why Silarud was the only one who had talked with her. How did you learn Ruvan? You live close to the Shillitoes. Did you learn it from them? Silarud was leader of her tribe. Deliani wondered whether she had ever met Lenara, another woman leader, and asked about this also. Her hostess's expression remained the same, but the Kirin sensed her recent questions had put an end to laughter, Grigla or otherwise. The old one stared through large, unblinking eyes slightly open and began a tale her visitor would never forget.
"Kinnan no friend," she said to Deliani's bewilderment. "No like Kinnan, no like Shillitum. Grigla, remember."
Pausing, she looked away as though collecting her thoughts, then turned back suddenly and exploded.
"Shillitum cave, not Shillitum!"
Then she was silent. Deliani was worried. Why is this aged Grigla all at once angry and hostile toward Kirin's, even though Brahms saved my life? Not able to understand what the old one meant about the cave, Deliani timidly asked again about the Shillitoes. The old woman seemed to sift through her vocabulary, selecting words carefully. And gradually and painstakingly, from the teller's mouth came an incredible story. At first, because of her broken Ruvan and what she seemed to be saying, Deliani couldn't believe what she was hearing. Yet ultimately, what came across was the picture of a struggle, very long ago, between rival factions. Two races, a struggle of life and death. One group, which Deliani assumed were the Grigla's ancestors, had dwelled in a home they loved, strenuously improving it with their hands and with blood, sweat, and tears. They lived there contentedly for many years, many hundreds of years, but one day the other faction invaded their settlement and privacy. Initially, it wasn't a violent invasion in the sense of physical fighting, but it felt violent to the Griglas, and was sudden and terrifying, because an element was introduced that rendered them helpless. They were driven by it from their home, their peaceful habitat, and never lived there again. Silarud stopped and looked at the floor, and Deliani finally asked, "Who were the invaders, and what drove your people away?" The old woman looked into the Kirin's eyes.
"Fire make Grigla go. Grigla remember."
An unknown disaster had befallen the other race. They came seeking a new place to live and found the Grigla's quiet space. Not knowing anyone lived there, first one came, then many, all bringing fire, and the Grigla's had no defense. That cave now occupied by Shillito Kirins was once the dark, peaceful haven of Grigla's.
"Grigla no like fire," said Silarud. "Go from cave, Kinnan stay."
Scenes of light-sensitive Grigla's shielding giant eyes and fleeing from the brilliance of Kirin torches flashed through Deliani's mind. What a tragedy, she thought, and found herself feeling guilty for something occurring eons ago because Kirin's caused the dreadful eviction. What disaster, she wondered, had befallen the Kirin's to make them leave their previous home and take over the cave? How much of that complex cave is the result of Grigla building, and how much was done by Shillitoes? Knowing what she did now, she felt quite differently about the cave. She still wondered why this Grigla spoke Ruvan. "Are you the only one who speaks our tongue?"
"I and son Byros, only Grigla say Kinnan word. Talk to Kinnan sometime. Need Kinnan word. I die. Byros say Kinnan word.
Deliani had met Boros, but not Byros. Are they one and the same? She wondered. The name pronounced slightly differently? It was a matter that would soon be clarified. When he dies, said Deliani, who will talk to Kirin's?
He teach son, daughter. For many family time, many parent, many genin, how say?
Generations.
Many genidation. Grigla leader family talk Kinnan. Leader say Kinnan word. Teach son, daughter. When I girl, father teach.
She struck her breast, then finally answered a question posed earlier.
Go with father, meet Shilatum. Kinnan girl there with her father. Name Lanada, never see again. We live, they live.
They met after all, thought Deliani. Would it help if they met again? But in these precarious circumstances, she made no mention of it. How many Griglas are there, she asked, outside of your tribe?
Not know, but many in past. Many more live here in past. Now know only us, Grigla.
Rather than venturing elsewhere, your ancestors remained here in the tunnels near the cave? Again came the low, resounding sound Deliani thought to be Grigla laughter.
Where go? Outside? There, great fire in sky. Kinnan like. Great fire blind, Grigla. Find tunnel. Dig tunnel.
She gestured toward the passageways all around.
Some before, some after Shilatum come. Stay here. Always hope live again, Grigla cave. Not go if fire live here. Long ago many Grigla try go cave, Kinnan use fire, we come back here. Wait, Kinnan leave and go again live near great fire. Then Grigla go our old home.
How incredible, thought Deliani, that I so require light, and these creatures who rescued me can't endure it. She was puzzled by what Silarud meant about Shilatos living near a great fire, but had other questions. If you don't like Kirin's, why did Brahms save me from the water, which I might never have gotten out of myself?
Your talk close different, Kinnan different, not Shilatum. We not see before. Brahms see you trouble, save you, bring here.
Deliani recalled the Shilato's voices, so mellow, except those of Issar and Lenara, and so enticing. Mine must indeed be different, she thought. Looking down at her tattered gown, she marveled that these beings could tell the difference between her garments and Shilato's in complete darkness. If your people and the Shilato's are such enemies, why don't you attack them when they're in the dark passageways? They can't see you.
No kill, Shilatum. If do, they come with fire.
Then why don't the Shilatos light all the corridors with torches, like the one Brahms gave me, but much brighter? The tunnel leading to the waterfall had many old torches on the walls. Thinking of that tunnel, Deliani remembered the stairway at its end, leading nowhere, and asked about it.
Steps you find made by Kinnan. Go into cave. Kinnan use steps, bring fire, many Grigla tunnel. Grigla wait, kill fire when Kinnan go. Long ago Grigla close hole top of steps. Kinnan come again, new way, bring more fire. Grigla wait, kill all fire again.
The old one stopped and looked Deliani in the eye.
But long ago learn cannot kill all fire in cave, and long ago stop try.
And there it was, suddenly and sadly, plain for the Kirin to see. Here were two factions, Kieran's and Grigla's, who for hundreds of years, perhaps thousands, had lived next to each other, barely communicating, maintaining an unwritten, uneasy truce. The Grigla's not allowing their tunnels to be lighted, the Shillitoes not tolerating attacks on their tribesmen. But it must not always have been that way. In the past, Grigla's attacked Shillitoes who retaliated with fire. The stairway she climbed, once a direct route to the tunnels, was used by Shillitoes to bring torches, a situation so intolerable for the Grigla's that they found a means to seal it off. I knew the stairway was Kieran made, thought Deliani, but could never have imagined it being used for that. What was initially a war of fear and intimidation must have turned violent. She pictured battles that must have raged next to the underground waterfall while the stairway was being constructed and when it was sealed off. Many more Grigla's existed then, she thought. Perhaps they are now a dying race. Helpless in the light of day, they stopped trying to recapture their cave, patiently awaiting the day its brightness was extinguished and it was theirs again. And the Shillitoes had been cave dwellers so long they had probably lost their skills and appetite for outdoor living, if that's where they came from, and were hardly inclined to move. All pieces of the puzzle were in place, save one. What caused the Shillitoes to seek a new home in the first place? Asked Deliani.
Not know, said Silarud. Not remembered.
Deliani had gleaned as much information from the wrinkled Grigla as she felt comfortable doing. What an innocent and marvelous existence we had, she caught herself using the past tense. In the woods at home, among the forest's flowers and trees. Why does it take a quest like ours to teach us that?
You hungry, said the old one. Need rest, kin and food. Take you cave.
Getting to her feet, she went to the chamber's entrance and boomed a command, then returned and sat down. Brahms appeared in the doorway, and a brief conversation followed. He left and returned shortly with another Grigla. Turning to Deliani, Silarud gestured toward the new one.
Byros, son, next leader when old, used mother die. Byros, speak, Kenan word. Take you cave.
Go, said the wrinkled one, motioning Deliani toward Byros. Knowing these creatures' uncomfortable predicament, and that they had saved her life, Deliani was moved at the prospect of leaving them, especially this woman. Yet she was eager to return to the cave, and, if they were still there, her friends. What about my bird?
Not worry, said Silarud.
Deliani was quiet. Thank you for everything, she said. She turned to Brahms. Thank you for saving my life. Looking puzzled, he glanced at Silarud, who apparently translated in their language. Deliani arose from her seat, and in doing so, realized how exhausted she was from lack of sleep, hunger, and worry. Going to the seated old woman, she touched the rough cloth covering her head. I'll think of you, said the Kieran. I'll never forget you. Silarud watched as Deliani picked up her meager torch and moved toward Byros, then disappeared through the doorway and was gone. Moving down the dusky passageway, the Kieran knew her fate was in the hands of the being accompanying her. Though he was Silarud's son, she didn't know him, and shivered, wondering whether she was finally being led toward Manet and the cave's brightness and freedom at last, or into some new, unpredictable, and hazardous misadventure. Chapter 45.
We must be allowed to join the search, demanded Spekeren, Deliani is a member of our party, and we have Bird Ilan.
The ancient Lenara was equally emphatic.
Your place is here. You don't know where to look. You'd get lost and lead us into a worse predicament. Our searchers would be looking for you.
Your arguments are sound, Speckeren was forced to admit, but just waiting is torture. They were in the Farinen, the queen sitting on a stool near Tally's bed, Speckeren pacing, waiting for the last to awaken, if that was to happen, and for news of Deliani. Also present were Hutt, the Farinor, and one of his helpers. Most able-bodied Shillitoes had been dispatched to find the missing woman and her raven. Speckeren wished he knew how long she had been gone. Time is impossible to estimate in this infernal place, he thought. All the cave's charms had faded for him with Deliani's startling disappearance. Lenara was mired in her own troubled thoughts. She realized that these two visitors, because they had Bird Ilan, might be the only ones able to find the missing woman, should she be outside. But the old queen was hardly certain she was, considering it far more likely she wasn't far from where they were right now. Lenara had not mentioned to her visitors, nor had she any intention of doing so, that a series of numerous and complex passageways existed around the cave. The average Shillito was not acquainted with many corridors, though they were near the cave. When going outside or returning, they were instructed to remain only in commonly traveled tunnels. In these they would be safe. Wandering farther afield might lead to danger. It was common knowledge that tribesmen in the past who ventured too far met with disturbing circumstances, but details were never given. Shillitoes today were unaware of the history and capabilities of beings dwelling in the tunnels.
And that's exactly the way we'll keep it, thought Lenara, her gaze trained upon the unmoving Tally.
The queen feared Deliani had lost her way trying to get outside and was now in that dark, secret, subterranean wasteland. Lenara instructed her tribesmen to seek the woman and her bird, but only outdoors and in the well-known passageways. Alone with her dark thoughts, the old queen feared that if the lost woman was not found in those areas, her tribe might have to search hidden and unknown tunnels they never entered. Consideration of Runagar joining the traveler's quest had been put on hold. There was good reason Deliani didn't see him when gazing from on high toward the cave's floor. He was one of the searchers. For a long time, Speckeren stood on the Farinen's terrace, looking down on search parties leaving the cave, on Fox Island and on foot, through the same archway he and Deliani had entered the day before.
Or was it the day before that, he wondered. Time means nothing now, and it seems far longer than 1 or 2 days.
Attend to your lass, said Lenara tensely. My kinsmen will make as thorough a search as they can.
Speckeren went to Tally. Hutt was already there, recalling with wonder the vision he had experienced riding with Runagar back to the cave.
Unfortunately, it's come to pass, he thought. The vigil for Tally going on without Deliani.
Having no idea how he could have known this, he thought about it over and over, gazing at his unconscious friend. Speckeren divided his time between the lass and the terrace. In his anxiety and exhaustion, on occasion he'd think he saw Deliani entering and be glad one more of his party had returned. But each time he was disappointed, his image a fond hope, and he would return unhappily to Tally. There he'd sometimes feel she was moving an arm or leg more meaningfully, or her breathing was different, and then realize nothing had changed. The arduous watch thus continued for the old magician, moving from one observation point to the other, his hopes high and always dashed. A lieutenant entered, stopping before the queen and speaking hastily in the local dialect. Looking grim, Lenara turned to Speckeren and spoke in Ruvan.
No evidence of the missing woman was found. We looked outside because her raven is probably with her, and we searched tunnels. We might begin to look in areas more difficult to reach.
She turned to her lieutenant and used the home dialect. He gazed at her, as if trying to be certain what he heard, then turned on his heel and departed. She said no more to Spekeren, who wondered where they would look if they had already searched everywhere, but didn't ask. The vigil continued. Eventually the queen suggested that, as long as no change had come in Tali, Spekeren and Hutt go to their chambers for a rest.
"I will summon you immediately," she said, "if anything happens with your girl or woman."
Reluctantly agreeing, Spekeren departed with the lad. Neither wanting to be alone, Hutt stayed in the magician's room, falling asleep in a chair, while Spekeren lay on the bed in fitful slumber. He awoke with a start, unsure how long he had been sleeping.
"It's impossible to tell time here," he grumbled, swinging his long feet over the edge of the bed and standing up.
He woke Hutt, and they climbed to the Farinen, where they found, to their disappointment, no change in Tali.
"No word of your woman has come," said Lenara,
still sitting on the stool, appearing not to have moved a muscle. The lieutenant hurried in and made a long-awaited report, and the queen translated for the anxious visitors.
"We have not found your woman."
She paused, then went on sternly in her reedy voice.
"I have come to a difficult decision. We have searched far and wide, some places familiar, some not. But enough is enough. With the exception of sentries, I am bringing my tribesmen home."
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirin's, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.